Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. I should begin by telling you that my name is Colin, and I am joined, as I always am, by Dom. Dom, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm excellent. And a bit of a backstory for this episode today. Today is going to be our interview with Brian Corydon, and our original plan was that we were going to do this interview and then tack our own weekly recap episode onto the end of that and just throw that all out as one podcast. But we talked to Brian yesterday. We have that all recorded. We're about to play it for you, and he was fantastic, and we are going to do this all in one episode, so you're going to get – this whole episode is going to be Brian, and then, if you're subscribed on iTunes, our recap episode is going to be up very shortly. Get very excited for this. Brian was fantastic. Dom, anything else to add before we send it over to the interview?
No, I'll just echo everything you had to say. So thanks for listening, guys, and here's Brian. So I believe you have Brian Corydon online. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're good. We're excited to be talking to you because obviously it's always good to be able to talk to the former contestants. We know you're still an avid watcher of the show, and in particular, you're on a season which I think has been underappreciated by a lot of people. So where do you guys want to start? I think the natural place is, how do you become a fan of the show?
Yeah, it's funny. It premiered back, I was only 17 when it started. And so my dad knew that I was really into psychology, and I decided that that would be my college major once I graduated high school. And so my dad had seen ads for the show, and he said, you know, I think you'd really like this. It's got a lot of psychological components to it, and it's a lot of physical stuff. I think you'd be really interested in it. And so I actually missed the first episode because it was my sister's, like, middle school graduation. And I got home right, like, as the last 10 minutes were on. I saw Sonia get voted off, and I was like, oh, my God, they kicked off that old woman? That's so nasty. Like, I love this. What is this? And so from there, basically, I was just completely hooked. And I, you know, I've never missed an episode, but I had to wait, 4 years until I could apply. And those were, like, the longest 4 years of my adolescent life waiting to apply for Survivor.
Well, let's talk about that now. How did you go about applying, and then from there, how did you get cast?
So I applied, actually. The first time I was eligible to apply, I technically actually wasn't eligible. So for Vanuatu, back in season 9, the deadline was like 2 weeks before my 21st birthday. And I was like, well, forget that. Like, I've waited this long. 2 weeks means nothing to me. So I sent in an application anyway, even though I wasn't actually yet 21. And this was before they started letting all these idiot 19-year-olds on the show. So this was when you actually still had to be 21. And so I applied anyway. And I got a call, like, 2 weeks later from this woman in casting, and I freaked out. I mean, obviously, I was, like, completely – I didn't even know what to do. So she called, and I guess they were just kind of scoping out the prelims. And I was a semifinalist for that season. I remember filling out the whole application, and I remember making that video. I didn't want anyone to know I was applying. I didn't want to deal with the whole, like, oh, have you heard yet? Oh, are you making it? Where are you? What's up? So I kept it to myself. I made my video. I tried to play up cocky Ivy Leaguer with my shtick. Going, I was just like a boring white kid from Connecticut, so I didn't have any real shtick to play. So I figured, you know, on all these shows, you got to have some sort of character, some sort of stereotype. So I went Ivy League angle because I went to Columbia. And I played up, cocky New England Connecticut boy, thinks he's so smart, blah, blah, blah. And I guess I caught their eye in the video. So they called me in for a semifinalist round. And then I was, I guess it was just not really what they expected when they got me at semifinalist. I think they're really trying to weed you out, trying to find the phonies, and then I think tell that that wasn't really me, that I wasn't really that cocky Ivy League character. So I ended up getting rejected after semifinals, and of course I was like crushed because I was convinced. Like, I was like, I mean, I'm totally good on this show. It's happening. So when I got that call saying, like, nope, sorry, not you're not right for the mix for the season or whatever, I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. So yeah, it was a bummer. But then I applied again for Palau, and I figured clearly my video and my application are getting me through. You know, out of the 60,000 people who are applying, they picked me for one of the 500 people for semifinalists. So that's not the problem. So let me just basically film basically the exact same video and fill out the application the same way. I just got to kind of change what I'm doing in the interview, in the semifinalist interview. So I got the call a second time as a semifinalist, went in a second time as a semifinalist, got rejected as a semifinalist. At this point now, I was just kind of pissed. I was like, wait, okay, this isn't how this is supposed to work. So season 11 came around for Guatemala, sent in a similar video, sent in a similar application, they called me back a third time. This was a different guy, though. This was a new casting guy. And so I was like, okay, so I can kind of start anew with him in this interview. So I figured, you know what, I just have to go, I have to turn that dial to 11 in the semifinalist interview. I have to be the cockiest son of a bee you've ever seen before. And I got there, and I went in for my interview, and I was just talking to him about basically what I felt, not like my life philosophy, right, the life philosophy of a 21-year-old, for whatever that's worth. And I said, I don't believe in being insulted. I said, I'm a psychology student. So I don't believe in insults. If an insult, if someone says something to you and it's false, why should you be offended? It's not true. Don't get offended by it. If someone came up to me and said, Brian, you're stupid, I'd be like, fail. You're wrong. I'm not. I'm not insulted by that. And if someone comes up to you and says something that's true, what right do you have to be insulted? That's the truth. You can't get insulted by the truth. You got to figure out why it is it bothers you and work on it. So if someone comes up to me and says, Brian, your ears stick out, I'm going to be like, congratulations, you're observant. What would you like from me? So I look right in the eyes of my casting director, and I go, so, for example, if I were to call you a little dumpy, you have no right to get offended. And, like, inside, I'm dying. I'm like, who said that? What's wrong with you? Like, who says that to a person's face? And he's just, like, shell-shocked. He's got his little clipboard there, and he's like, okay, so next question. And I'm like, I can't believe it. Just called my interviewer a fat ass. Like, I don't know what I'm thinking. But I just kind of kept that facade of like, what? Like, I'm a cocky Ivy League kid. And that's what got me through. So he called me like a few weeks later, and he was like, hey, Brian, do you know the best thing you did in your interview? And I was like, no, but it was the best thing I did. He's like, the best thing you did was call me dumpy. And I was like, you need a self-esteem check, bro. Like, that's a problem. And he was like, no, it was great because it was a lot of personality and it made me look objective to my employers because I was able to put someone through even though they had blatantly insulted me. So it was a win-win. And I was like, fantastic. So I was one of the 50 finalists flown out to LA. And then, I mean, that was amazing. Have you talked to other people about the audition process? Did they like...
Not in this much depth, actually. So, I mean, as much as you can tell us would be fantastic, because this is something I think many Survivor fans are very curious about.
It's actually, the whole thing was tremendously fun for me. Like, the application process, it's like where the game started. I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, you want to interview me? Like, let's go. This is fun. So we get to L.A., and L.A. is 10 days. I think they've kind of changed what they do now. I was on 7 years ago, so I know they've gone through a lot of iterations with the whole process of application and auditioning. But I was in L.A. for 10 days, and you're, like, sequestered in this hotel room. And I had to lie to all my friends because, you know, no one's supposed to know, obviously, for all those people still applying. Like, it's a secret. You're not supposed to tell anybody. Your name can't get out there. So I was still in my last semester of college, and so I had to lie to all my friends and teachers and say I was on a medical leave for 10 days. And everyone was like, oh, okay. And my roommate was like, Brian, are you okay? Like, 10 days, that's a big deal. Like, a 10-day medical leave? Like, what's wrong? Are you okay? And I was like, it's really embarrassing. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not asking any questions. End of story there. And so for the rest of the year, he just called me One Nut because that's what he thought. So I had to bear that for the rest of the semester. But it was worth it. In L.A., you're there, and you're just like, it's so surreal. I mean, for a freaking huge Survivor fan, like, I couldn't contain myself. I was just so giddy the entire time in L.A. And you're only allowed out of your room for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and these interviews. Oh, and the gym. That's the other time you can go out of your room. And, you know, you're scoping out the 50 people there and, like, kind of seeing what's up. And actually, I remember... You obviously can't talk to anybody. They'll like freak out. But there's one time when I left the dining room to go back up to my room after like lunch, there was this other woman in the stairwell, and she looks at me and she goes, good luck. This is really fun, right? And I was like, is this a plant? Is she a plant? If I say yes, am I going to get kicked out? So I just kind of like smiled and nodded back to her. And I later found out when I was watching Gabon, that was totally Susie for Gabon season. So when I ended up meeting Susie, I just recognized her because that face was like implanted in my memory. And when I met Susie, you know, years later after Gabon aired, I was like, were you the woman in the stairwell? And she's like, yes, I was. Oh, my God, I can't believe you remember that. So you see these people. I mean, people obviously apply it many times. I think this season Troy has applied a ton of times for Venom. But, you know, you go through these interviews and psych tests and meeting with a psychologist and IQ tests and stuff. And I remember Jeff Probst, the bastard, was giving me such a hard time with everything. Like, and I get that that's their job, right? They want to break you down. They want to tell you, you know, oh, my God, I can't believe we wasted money bringing you here. Like, oh, you'll be the first one out. Like, what? This is a waste of everyone's time. And you have to kind of stand your ground and, you know, support why you should be there. And so I remember we took our IQ test, and I got my results back from that IQ test. And having done a lot of psych studying, like, I knew where my IQ fell. I knew what it meant with the bell curve and all that. So I knew that. So in one of my interviews, you know, I'm this, like, 21-year-old kid in this little room flanked by these, like, eight producers in the presidential suite, and you feel, like, so small, but you have to just put on this bravado. And Jeff kept saying, like, you know, look, kid, I know you think you're really smart. Like, I get it all, but you're not nearly smart as you think you are. I'm sure you're smarter than me. And I was like, excuse me, that's pronoun agreement. You actually should be smarter than I am. Like, you're seeing this jackass who corrects his grammar and all that. And so he's like, look, you're not even one of the top 10 smartest people here. And he pulls up this piece of paper that he's holding, which I guess had the 50 people ranked by IQ. And the thing is, he turns to the guy next to him and he says, look where Brian is on this list. Like, he thinks he's so smart. It's hilarious. Look where he actually fell on this list of the 50 people here. And he points to the list. But what he doesn't realize is he's sitting in front of a window, and paper has this, you know, tendency to be kind of translucent. So I can see the paper, even though he's holding it up, so he's looking out the front. I can see my name on the list. I can see that he's blatantly lying to me. But I'm such a rule follower, so I don't want to be like, excuse me, actually, I can see the list, and you're blatantly lying to me right now. So instead, I just kind of use that as ammo. I'm like, okay, fine. So Jeff's trying to fake me out here. So I go back, and I'm like, oh, yeah, really? Who's smarter than me, the jackass in the cowboy hat? Like, not happening. And then he's like, okay, fine, you're so smart. Okay, no problem. All right, fine. So you're so smart. What does this mean? And then he pulls up something on his laptop. And at this point, I'm like, ready to grab my pants. Like, my stomach is in my throat. I'm like, oh my God, what is he going to pull up? Like, if I don't know what this is, I'm going to look like such a fool putting on all these, like, airs. And he's pulling something up on his laptop to prove how smart I am. I'm like, oh my God, this is like, what is the atomic, you know, number of selenium? I'm like, I don't know. So he pulls this thing up and he turns it around to me. And what he's pulled up is actually on, okay, so the SAT. I'm an SAT teacher. I run an SAT company in Long Island, so I work with high school juniors, and I prep them for the SAT. And what he's pulled up is the front page of the math section of the SAT. it couldn't have been better for me. It's this box, and in this box are all the formulas you need to complete the math section. So it'll say, like, the area of a triangle, Pythagorean theorem, a 30-60-90 triangle, volume of a cylinder, all of those things. So he turns around and he's like, okay, hotshot, explain this to me. And I turn it around, and I'm just like, I laugh, because I'm like, okay, A, I'm an SAT teacher. Like, of course I can explain that to you. B, I'm sorry. That was your genius test? Your genius test was, okay, hotshot, what's the area of a triangle? Like, that was your test, Jeff Probst? Are you kidding me right now? Like, you were trying to get me by getting my window of the area of a triangle? Like, seriously, what does that say about you right now? What does that say about you? And then Lynn Stillman was just like, Jeff, he's an SAT teacher. And I was like, heck, suck it, Jeff Probst. Like, I was. It was just amazing. Like, I had a blast in those interviews. And, you know, you walk out of the room and you're, like, shaking, because the whole time or at least I was, I mean, not everybody was, I was really, like, putting on this character and just going, like, dialing up to 11. And so I'm coming out of the room, like, shaking, just like, oh my God, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I okay? And throughout the week, you, like, feel like you see people getting whittled down. And it's like, I remember there being 50 people here. Are there still 50 people here? It doesn't feel like it. I don't know. And you see other people. I saw Gary and Rafe and Blake and Morgan, all these other people from my season. And you try to guess who's going to make it, you know? And then finally, on the last day, they told me I had made the top 20, but that they were only taking 16, so they still needed some time to to make the decision. So then I went home from L.A. not knowing, and I spent the last, like, month and a half or 2 months of my senior year of college, like, not knowing if I was cast for Survivor or not. So I had to write, you know, these stupid papers for college. I was like, the over-diagnosis of ADHD among upper-middle-class suburban teenagers. And I'm, like, writing this research paper, and I'm like, I don't care. I don't care at all. Oh, my God. Why am I doing this? Am I on Survivor or not? And then the day of my college graduation, I got a call from Adam, my casting guy, and he was like, "Hey Ryan, how you doing?" I was like, "I'm doing great. I just graduated. I was magna cum laude. I'm really excited." And he's like, "Oh, okay, we're gonna give you a call tomorrow." And I was like, "Oh my God." He's like, "No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. You got cast. You're one of the 16 people." And I'm like, I can't even. It's just like I couldn't even express myself. I was over the moon. I mean, to get on Survivor, I was 21, to get on Survivor, and, like, I'd waited 4 years to apply. I was rejected twice. It was literally a dream come true. I'd actually dreamt about being a Survivor, and now I was going on Survivor. And it was incredible. It was so exciting. And then I left for the show, like, well, I guess that was in May. I graduated in May, and we filmed starting the end of June. So it was like a month and a half or so, and flew down to Miami, and that's where I got to see everyone else who was picked. And you're like, you look around, and you're like, oh, you got picked? Really? You were picked? And oh, okay, of course you were picked. I knew you would get there. And then we flew down to Guatemala, and the game began. And it was nuts. It was nuts.
That's awesome. I was very eager to apply for Survivor, and that whole story about the application process was fantastic, first of all. That's stuff I've never heard in 12 years or whatever as a mega fan myself. Just as a question, you know, we've seen very young players do well historically. You know, Sophie recently, or like Todd Herzog, Fabio Denemaraska. But I feel like there's kind of a sweet spot, I would say probably between like 28 and 35 is really where I think you generally want to be about when you're playing Survivor. I think that's where you're going to appeal to the most people in terms of people you could potentially be working with. What thoughts do you have about that? And do you kind of how did you feel about being one of the younger players on your season? Although your season did have many young players.
Yeah, my season is fine. My season, I think, was really loaded with a bunch of young kids. I mean, Morgan was 21, Brianna was 21, Rafe, Brandon, and I were all 22, actually, by the time the game started. And I'm forgetting some other people who were young. But anyway, yeah, we had a bunch of really young people, Brooke, of course. I feel like, obviously, young people, I'm good friends with Sophie and Todd, and you know, young people can do extremely well. But there is a real hardship, I think, with being so young and being able to, I think in particular in my season, I felt like my youth did disadvantage me at some point. After the tribal swap, I think it was harder for me. Well, it's a bunch of factors, but I think it was harder for me to have any kind of semblance of authority or legitimacy or the power, I guess, as a 22-year-old. And it's a stupid thing to say, admittedly, because then on the other side you had people like Rafe and Stephanie running the show. But with Gary really just, you know, kind of came as a de facto leader because he was older. And I remember there were things that Gary would do, and I was like, I don't want to listen to Gary. Like, I don't agree with that. Like, why do we need to defer to Gary on everything? And it just felt like because we had such a young tribe, people like, even Amy would defer to Gary, and Amy is like the most authoritative person I've ever met. I've met Amy. Jim was just kind of like, young. I think had I been older, had I been like 28 or 29 at the time, I think I probably could have had a little bit more sway. I don't think I had much sway at all. I mean, for several reasons, but one of them was definitely my age, I think. I think if I were to play again today, I just think, I don't know. Now I'm 29, so, I mean, that's crazy that it was so long ago. But as a 29-year-old, I think that you have a little bit more perspective, and you're a little bit more aware of what that money can do for you. And I think people are more likely to listen to you. You know, what could I have possibly done to get Gary to be like, yes, I'm going to follow this 22-year-old, this, like, idiot kid? Like,
right, yeah.
It was tough. It was tough, I think. And, you know, post-swap, I was with Danny and Gary in particular, and I think I was very much viewed as like the little kid on tribe. I think I was very much like the little brother kind of thing. And And that's not a role I've ever had before, so it was a little weird to be like, wait, I'm sorry, are people condescending to me because I'm young? Because that's not cool. Like, I'm not okay with that. And it wasn't anything I'd really been familiar with. But, I mean, that's not to say that I disliked anybody on that team. I mean, that team was fantastic. And even though they were, like, super religious at times and I couldn't relate to that, I really had a great group of people.
Yeah, well, the way that we actually like to do things here is we love when we have guests on to be able to kind of talk through their own games chronologically. It's a very easy way to go through and pick out all the points of interest that I think many of us viewers have been dying to find out about for 7 years now when it comes to Guatemala specifically. So you know you've been cast. You know you're now out in Guatemala as in the couple of days leading up to the game. What's kind of going through your head? What kind of preparation are you doing? And what kind of goals are you setting for yourself?
The only goal I ever had was win the game. Like, I was never like, oh, I just want to get to the merge or I just want to get to the jury. Neither of which I made, by the way. So when we got there, we were, we flew from Miami to Guatemala. And then we got in this bus. And, you're with handlers the whole time, so you can't talk to anybody. You can't obviously make any pre-game alliances or anything like that. But, you do obviously make eye contact here and there. And I remember at one point Margaret had her bag open, and she and I had the exact same puzzle book that we had bought at an airport, with, crosswords and logic puzzles and all that. And so I remember she had her bag open. I saw the book, and I pulled out my book, looked at her, and just, nodded, we had the same book. Because I was like, anything I can do right now to, get on people's good side, that's all I need. So, you're doing that. You're looking around. We got to our lodge. And actually, I had already known a little bit about Margaret because in the finals in L.A., I did a lot of scoping out of the other people to try to figure out where they're from. And I remember when we were all in one room, waiting for our final meetings with the execs, Margaret was sitting across the table from me, and she was reading a book, and the book had a stamp on it that said Chardon Public Library. And so I remember I went back home and I Googled where Chardon was, and I was like, okay, so that woman's from Ohio. And, you just start kind of going info about her. So it's like she's being asked as the Midwestern mom. That's her thing. So when I saw Margaret with the puzzle book, I was like, okay, let me pull out my puzzle book and be like, hey, look, you and I, we're so similar. And then we got to the holding lodge in Guatemala, and you did do all your pre-game interviews. So all the publications were there that still covered Survivor at the time, all the Us Weekly and People and all that. And you're basically there for a few days before. There was really no survival training or anything. It was kind of Mark Burnett saying, don't die. And there was a really, really heavy push from Mark Burnett to have nobody quit. He was really, really serious about that. Having just come off of Palau, I guess, where Jeff Wilson basically rolled his ankle and quit, and then Janu quit the game. So he was, I guess, really down on quitters, and he was just basically like, you will be a pariah if you quit, and the world will think of you as a pariah forevermore. And we're like, all right, we get it, don't quit. And they also really hyped up that our season was going to be the most difficult season they'd ever done to date. The environment was particularly unforgiving. It was really harsh conditions there. So he wanted people to, I think, mentally prepare for what was going to be way worse than, say, Palau or Borneo. And we were separated into a few different groups, and we were brought around the whole the property in different areas, meeting with different people. And I remember Hunter Ellis from Marquesas was one of the people who interviewed me.
Sure.
And I was like, oh my God, you're Hunter Ellis from Huntington, California. You were the third person voted off Marquesas. And I was like, this is a weird kid. Why does he know all of this? But he was fun to talk to. And I do remember, from my room, we were going in cycles, so not all 16 of us were going at the same time. It was groups of 8, I think, or maybe two groups of 5 and 6. So we were brought around, so I was in my room at one point for other people's interviews, and from my room, I could hear the interviews, and I don't think anyone realized that. So I would just sit under my window with the window wide open and then just listen. So, for example, Brandon, he did this whole pregame interview about, I'm just here to make – I want to be the hero, and I want to do good, and I don't want to do anything bad in the game. And that's actually much more of a Jamie accent than a Brandon accent. whatever. The point remains. So I remember listening to them thinking, oh, so Brandon is like super virtuous. So whenever I come across Brandon, I really need to talk about like, you know, oh yeah, like, oh goodness and blah, 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 and whatever. And don't swear and talk more slowly and don't look like this intimidating New Yorker. Like slow your voice down and, you know, don't ever talk about lying or deceitful things around him. So I was just gathering info like left and right about people as best as I could going into the game. So I wasn't just blindly meeting these people in the game. And that's basically something that I'm sure I wasn't supposed to be doing, but I mean, whatever. And then finally, they brought us all out. And obviously, of course, Bobby John and Stephanie were not involved in this process. But they kept asking, like, who are your favorite people from last season? So everyone was like, oh, I loved Stephanie. I loved Bobby John. They were so great. And that's, I think, I feel like I remember one clip in particular in the pregame lead up to Guatemala. People knew that there were going to be two returning players as far as the viewing audience was concerned. And I remember there was one clip where they had totally manipulated those interviews to look like the interviewer said, oh, so who do you think the two returning players are? And they would cut to people like, well, I love Stephanie. I love Bobby John. But in our team, of course, we had no idea that two more people were going to be added to the cast, which is why we were all so surprised when Stephanie and Bobby John emerged from the temple once the game started. And I remember Jeff had said, we're giving you guys some tools to help you in the game. And that was sort of the introduction. And we all looked up at the top of this pyramid, and I fully expected two people to come out in full-on Mayan regalia. Like, I thought we were getting traditional Mayan people to, like, guide us through the woods. So I didn't realize, even at that point, that there was going to be two former contestants rejoining the game. But I was a big Stephanie fan. I liked her a lot in Palau. And so when I saw her come out, I thought, oh, I hope we get her on our team because I like her. And I like Bobby John a lot, but I thought I would have less to talk about with Bobby John. And so Stephanie joined our team, and I was very excited. And then I got the first confessional of the season. That was a huge milestone for me. I was super excited.
That's right.
My confessional was about, oh, blah, 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 now that we have Stephanie, we're going to win every challenge, which, of course, was ironic because they have not won any challenges at all. But I was very excited to get Stephanie. So that's how the game opened. I mean, we were led. We did all of our pregame photos, and we were handed out buffs before the game started. So we were separated into our teams, and then they filmed us, you know, walking through the jungle and looking around, and, look at the Guatemalan wildlife. And then they had us walk into that arena where Jeff was, and that's where the whole season premiere opens that viewers saw on TV. And then the marathon began. A 12-mile hike? It was 11 miles. It ended up being more because we kept getting lost. And obviously that, I mean, on TV, that was nothing. Like, you saw nothing on TV from that. You saw that thing for, what, 15 minutes? I mean, we did that hike for 24 hours. We kept getting lost. Production was, like, so annoyed with this idiot crew. Like, the nine of us on your show, we just kept going the wrong way. We were like this band of idiots. Just keep going the wrong way. And production, they had the patience of Job. Because they can't interfere, obviously. They can't be like, no, you're supposed to go this way. So they have to keep following us down these clearly wrong paths. They're like so annoyed with these dumb fools going the wrong way to the Guatemalan jungle. And, it was insane. There were like thickets and just everywhere you would go, you would be in these like briar patches. And like Blake got attacked by that angry tree that came down on his shoulder. And people kept throwing up. And one of my interviews that night, I saw the game going, and I was like, oh, you know, the hike is really exciting, and this is no big deal to me. Like, 1 second, blah! Blah, 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 blah. And he just like, kept throwing up because we were so sick, like dehydrated, and we were drinking this, like, you know, lake water that had been boiled, admittedly, but, you know, when you're just, like, really exerting yourself to a degree that you don't usually exert yourself, I mean, the heat, it was like 112 degrees, and it was 100% humidity, and there were mosquitoes everywhere, and it's just this, like, harsh, unforgiving climate, and you're carrying these, like, 20-pound bags of corn with you, because we picked up supplies at the start of the game, and that horrendous, stupid tribal flag to bring everywhere with us. It was this, like, long, unwieldy thing with like a cross at the end of it and this like stupid big flag, and we have to carry it everywhere we went. And of course, we're like contorting our bodies to get through trees and branches, and this dumb flag kept having to come with us everywhere, and that would slow us down. And you're carrying all your gear, and Morgan went through like the whole hike with a bag of corn on her head. It's insane. She just bounced like the magician's assistant. She had this amazing poise and this like great core strength. She like was walking through like it was a beauty pageant with this bag of corn on her head. And, you know, and of course, I guess at that point, all, when all the alliances start. But I don't know, it's just like sketchy. It's just sketchy to me when you just like randomly make alliances with people you don't know. Like it just, it's such a save-ass thing to do. And of course, you have to do it. It's vital. But, you know, what happened on our team was of the 9 of us on the team, 6 people made an alliance in the beginning. And those 6 people were Gary, Amy, Stephanie, Rafe, Brianna, and Morgan. So Jamie, Lydia, and I were totally on the outs, and we didn't even know it at that point. But those 6 people had locked in an alliance along the way. And so we finally go through the whole hike, and oh my God, it was just grueling. And the hike like ends with this, basically a cliff, and like you get to this cliff, and we're supposed to canoe across the lake, and you look down, and you see the canoe. I think there was a clip on the show where I was like, "Oh, we emerge from the jungle, and we see the clue, the canoe," and we're like, "Oh, hallelujah!" But the clue is at the bottom of this really steep, steep drop. The canoe was at the bottom, and we come out, and we like have to slide down this whole thing on our butts. With all this gear and this dumb flag and the huge bags of corn and all the canteens and the fruit we had carried and et cetera. And it was just like bruised all over our bodies. We get to this canoe. We have a canoe across the lake and we get there. And at that point we had kind of caught up to Nakum, but it was clear that they were going to win, obviously, because they were already halfway across the lake. So we get across, we go up, and Jeff tells us, "Oh, you know, Nakum wins the nice camp. Congratulations, blah, blah, blah." And then he turns to us and he goes, "Hey, guys, where is your tribe flag?" And we're like, yeah. That was Amy's job. And then he turned to Amy and he was like, "What? What? You thought I was the only one who was supposed to remember the flag?" And we're like, "You were in charge of the flag. Where is the flag?" And she's like, "Oh, I think I left it on the other side of the lake." Like, oh, my God. So Jeff's like, "Well, that flag is part of the game, so you need to go back and get it." And we're like, "You've got to be kidding me with this." So we, before we were allowed to go back to our camp, we had to canoe back across that lake, go find the flag, and then come back. And Jamie was so annoyed at that point that he just, like, when we got to the other side of the lake, he was just like, I'll go find it. I'm just going off and I'm going to go find it. So Jamie just went by himself. And he just went off, and the other 8 of us just sat in the canoe waiting for him. And he was gone for like an hour trying to find that. And meanwhile, we're all like baking in the sun on the side of the lake, waiting for him to come back. And so finally he comes back, and we go to our camp. And we actually feel like we, even though we had lost the race, we were like, we definitely got the better camp. Like, the other camp, yeah, it had the Mayan ruins, and I guess that's cool to say you lived in the Mayan ruins. But it was completely exposed to the sun. Because it was a pyramid, it was built in a clearing. So they were living without any shade. Like, they were living out in this pretty much wide-open place. Whereas our camp was in the woods. So we had, like, a canopy over us. So we weren't exposed to the sun all day. And their walk to the lake was, like, 4 times as long as our walk to the lake was. So whenever they had to get water, they had to go really far to get their water, whereas ours was like our backyard was the lake, so we just went down the lake and got water. So we like to think we were the winners, even though we were completely athletically outmatched on every possible front by the other team. We got the nicer camp, in our opinion. And that is, that's how the game started.
Okay. Well, you answered a lot of the questions that we had. I mean, just trying to think where to continue from here. You get to camp initially, and the game begins officially, I guess. What were your first impressions of everybody at that point?
I think our season was interesting because of that 24-hour hike. Our first night wasn't at camp. Our first night was in the jungle with no fire, no water, no camp, no shelter, nothing. So our first night was basically just, we walked until it got pitch black, until we physically could not walk anymore because it was pitch black. I mean, the cameras didn't even have lights on them to show us the way or anything. So we were in the densest part of the Guatemalan jungle, pitch black. So we had to just stop where we were, sit down, and, like, curl up in balls and fall asleep wherever we were. So in other seasons, you know, you get kind of dropped off at the beach or like, oh, Jeff is coming in on a helicopter and greets you on this fancy beach. And it's all very, like, froofy, and you can all just, you know, oh, we had to walk, like, a full 10 minutes to our camp, and it was so grueling. Like, you know, I don't want to hear it, South Pacific. So, you know, in all those seasons, they just, like, make their shelter, and it's all very niceties and such. Our season, I feel like it was unique in that first impressions really had to be genuine because there was no room for niceties. Like, we were in this really freaking awful situation going through with all this gear and having to really push and at the same time racing the other team. So we didn't have any of the niceties. It was just basically like go from the get-go. And first impressions really were formed by like who can carry their weight. Not like who do I like, oh, who's cool, who's funny, whose personalities do I mesh with. It was really like, well, you know, who can carry stuff? Like who can get us through? Who is slowing us down right now? And in the beginning, I think that's really was where Lydia struggled most socially because she really was the person who everyone was kind of like, she's kind of taking forever. Because you weren't allowed to have too far a distance between the first person and the last person when you were hiking because the camera crew has to have you all at the same time. You can't split up. So there were so many times when it would be, you know, Morgan was up front, I was up front, Rafe was up front, Stephanie was up front, and we'd have to stop. They'd say, guys, hold up, you have to wait. And we'd have to stop and then wait for, like, Amy and Lydia to catch up. So there was, I think, that really was like, okay, well, they're going to become the slower players, I think. And, you know, this is all coming from the guy who's on the outs of the six-person alliance. So clearly other people's first impressions were like, hey, let's make an alliance, where I was the fool not doing that, even being a super fan. So my first impressions of people were that Morgan was really able to pull her weight, even though she was really tiny. Brianna was trying to prove something, like that she was a girly girl, but that she could really do this. Rafe seemed to be like the comic relief, I thought. I thought he was the one who was going to be kind of like the goofy guy. I don't know. And Jamie was clearly the hothead southern idiot, who I ended up really liking a lot. Gary was fatherly figure. Amy was this brass knuckle, like tough as nails woman. And Lydia was like the endearing underdog that everyone would want to root for. Obviously, everyone already knew Stephanie. And did I forget anybody else? I think that was basically it. So my first impressions were basically like, who can I trust? Like, who am I going to get along with? And once I saw that Lydia was kind of slacking on everything, I actually kind of started to empathize with her. And I was just kind of like, oh, this woman, like, she's a single mother with, you know, an only child, and she's such a fan of the show. Like, I don't love that everyone's kind of looking at her with these, like, shark eyes, just kind of, like, licking their chops at the first one to go. So, actually, I bonded most with Lydia over the hike, and I kind of wanted to keep inspiring her to go and motivate her, and I just ended up really liking Lydia a lot. And the same thing happened with Jamie and Lydia. Jamie was also like, oh, this woman, like, how admirable. Like, I really like what she's doing. So that was the first impressions were I like Lydia a lot. I like Brianna a lot. I obviously like Stephanie a ton. Gary, I feel like I like, but I'm going to need to work on that because I think that he's going to be the de facto leader, and I don't know how that's going to work. Amy I didn't like. I was like, I'm not cool with this chick. Like, she is really obnoxious and swears like a sailor and has, like, absolutely no polish whatsoever. So Amy I didn't like at all. Of course, ironically, Amy is now the person I'm closest with from that team. Like, Amy is fantastic. But in the game, and she'll attest to this too, like, we were not pals. I was like, I'm not. Who the hell is this? Like, uh-uh. And Rafe, I never trusted Rafe in the game just because I was like, what's his deal? Why is he here? Like, he's a player. So I didn't know that I would ever really be able to trust Rafe. So when we finally got to camp and we were building shelter, I was like, let me just play into, clearly Gary is a workhorse, so I need to just be a workhorse. And that's how I'm going to get in Gary's good graces. So I was doing a lot of gathering firewood and helping build the shelter and just generally always doing something. because our team was a very rah-rah team, and I felt like work ethic would go a long way, with especially people like Gary. And I felt like if I was on Gary's side, I felt like Gary would have sway of the whole team. So my thing was work ethic, work ethic, work ethic, just work really hard. And then once we got to the camp, that's when you started kind of like feeling out people for personality and strategy and day-to-day life. That's when kind of the niceties came. So in our season, it's sort of reversed. We had the hardships first and then the niceties instead of the niceties, and then you have to do the brute work. And we won that first immunity challenge. Nothing, you know, the first day at camp was actually day three for us. So the immunity challenges were that day, and we won that challenge because poor Jim, you know, he ripped his bicep, like, off. It was pretty gross. His bicep was, like, dangling from his arm. Yeah, it was really gross. Was
thanks for that.
Yeah, I hope you guys all have a pretty sweet visual of, like, 60-year-old dude's bicep hanging down like a flabby, well, you know. So he, they had lifted the canoe. You know, we had to lift the canoe out of the water as part of that challenge. And I guess on his team, they were going to do 1, 2, 3 lift, but he thought it was 1, 2 lift. So when they were going 1, 2, 3, everyone else was prepared to then go afterward lift. But he lifted on 3, and he lifted with such force to expect that the 8 other people also lifting, that he was basically trying to lift a 1,000-pound canoe on his own with one hand, and just tore his bicep doing it.
Yeah.
And that's what killed Jim. I mean, he was out of the game basically as soon as that happened. So that's why he was really voted off on that team. So we didn't actually have to start living camp life and plotting really until kind of day 4, because that's when the reward challenge came and we lost that challenge and we started to think, okay, we might be a little outmatched here. That first win might have been a complete fluke. because you look at that team, and that was another thing. I was like, when we were assigned our buffs before the game started, I looked at my team and it was like Rafe and Lydia and Brianna and Morgan, and I would even throw myself in there. Like, I would certainly physically fit, but not nearly as physically fit as looking at that other team. You had Bobby John and Brandon and Blake and Judd, who's like 250 pounds, and Cindy and Margaret and Danny. I was like, this is a joke. This is like Bad News Bears. Like, you, yeah. What's that?
I love the Bad News Bears reference.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wanted to look at the producers and be like, really? Seriously? Like, are you kidding me with this? Like, come on. What the hell? So, you know, we were shocked that we won that first immunity challenge, and we were quickly brought into the reality when we proceeded to win 0 more challenges as a team. And so once I think the most interesting thing, I would like our season. I feel like our season's terribly underrated. Guatemala, like, we got no people ever coming back. No one ever talks about Guatemala. It's like the redheaded stepchild of Mark Burnett Productions. But I think we had a really good season. And the interesting thing that I think a lot of our viewers don't really know about episode 2, when Morgan ended up going home, that was such a, like, cluster mess at the end of leading into Tribal Council, because we had lost the immunity challenge, and Jamie and Brianna were both really sick. We had corn on our season. We had to grind the corn, and then, like, we had to soak the corn overnight and then grind it and then make corn cakes, and that's all we had to eat. I got 20 pounds in 15 days because I was so hungry. But they had given us this lime powder, like, I guess, like, limestone or lime powder or whatever that is. Basically, they use it for, like, decomposed corpses is what it's used for. But it can also, I guess, soften the corn if you put it in the water, and it makes the corn easier to grind, I guess. Anyway, we didn't know what that was, and we thought it was salt. So Jamie and Brianna had put it on their corn cakes and ate it. And that's basically a toxin, so they got really sick. So going into Tribal Council of episode 2, actually Jamie and Brianna were both really sick, so we didn't really want to vote off Jamie because he was the only, like, really strong dude on our team. But Brianna was kind of like the obvious bet to go, like, you know, vote off Brianna. She's sick and she's smaller and we like her. It's not a personality problem. But, like, you know, she's sick and we got to vote somebody off, so obviously Brianna. But then there was this weird opposition to voting off Brianna. And Jamie and I were just kind of like, what the heck? This should be a no-brainer. Like, what's happening? And that's when we kind of realized, oh, crap, we're on the out. Like, that's when they're voting off Brianna, because she's protected by, like, the powers that be on this team. So everybody was like, oh, obviously it's Lydia. It's Lydia going home. And Jamie and I were like, well, what are we doing? So Jamie and I actually spent a lot of time talking to each other, trying to figure out what to do. And he's like, well, look, it's going to be Lydia, so what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not voting for Lydia. Like, she's clearly someone who's never going to vote against me. Why would I vote her out? Like, I'm not going to vote out someone who I know is on my side. But...
Well, what we end up seeing is you manage to work over a unanimous Morgan boot. Do you want to walk us through that process? Because that was pretty impressive.
That's what's happening. So it was basically, as far as we were concerned, between Lydia and Brianna. Like, Morgan's name wasn't even on the table. Morgan's name was not even on the table, from my standpoint, anyway. And I doubt it was from theirs. I know you saw on TV that people talked about Morgan or Lydia, but all that, honestly, all that happened in the span of, like, 15 minutes, right before we left for tribal council. Because prior to that, no one had talked about Morgan. But I didn't really trust Morgan because two things. One, after our reward challenge, that was the reward challenge in our season with the spider web, where we had to, like, run over the mat and crawl in the spider web and untie a bag and such. And at one point, Cindy outdid me. So Cindy got back before I got back. And we got back from camp, and that was also the challenge where Rafe, like, could not crawl up the rope ladder to save his life. And he kept falling off that rope ladder and just falling off. And we're all sitting there like, I'm watching America's Funniest Home Videos, but I'm doing it and I want to die. Like, why can't you not get up with that thing? So Morgan was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, we really lost because Cindy kicked Brian's ass. And I was like, excuse me, what? Like, that's why we lost? First of all, bitch, I got two bags. I got two bags. So we lost because Wraith fell off and then took half a century getting back to us. And a few other people fell off. It sure wasn't my fault. But I'm obviously not saying any of this because you don't want to be confrontational. But right then I was like, all right, I'm not with Morgan. Like, Morgan is someone who's not with me. Like, if she's going to call me out on that in front of everybody, I have no use for her. Like, she's not on my side. So I had my gun side. I had Morgan in my crosshairs. But that was a fool's errand. No one was voting off Morgan. She was athletic. She was fun. People liked her. Morgan wasn't going anywhere. So Jamie and I were really frustrated because no one wanted to vote off Brianna. And I was just kind of like, oh, God. Well, he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I'm not voting for Lydia. I guess I'll just put down Brianna. So before you leave, or at least on my season, that's all I can speak of. Before you leave for tribal council, you tell production who you're voting for. You're welcome to change it. But production just needs to have an idea of what's going on. So before we left the tribal council, they said, okay, so who are you going to vote for tonight? And I was like, I guess Brianna. I'm going to vote for Brianna. I mean, it's got to be Lydia going home, but I'm just going to vote for Brianna. And that's how I left it, you know, in the final interview I did before tribal council. And then they call, then it was like we were going to get our bags and stuff to go to tribal council. And I overheard Morgan in the shelter talking to Jamie. And I heard Morgan say something like, don't trust him, or I can't trust you, or something like that. Just very, you know, completely innocuously, not like a big thing. But I was just kind of like, okay, it's now or never. Like, I got to take what I overheard from her and just spin it and spew it to Gary. Because if anything's happening, it's happening through Gary. So I heard that, and I ran over to Gary, and I was like, Gary, just FYI, Morgan said she can't trust you, which isn't quite what she said, but I was like, whatever. Like, I got to get this to happen. So I was like, Gary, just FYI, Morgan just was telling Jamie in the shelter that she can't trust you. And Gary was like, wait, what? I was like, but what about, you know, well, oh, God. And that's when you start seeing some of the conversations that you saw on TV. When Gary and I were talking, and on TV you see Gary saying, like, oh, well, Morgan or Lydia. And I'm like, well, how can we vote off Lydia? Which, oh, that was the other thing, because I knew Gary was such a workhorse. I harped on, oh, Morgan's so lazy. Like, she wasn't honestly that lazy. She was fine. Morgan was not doing anything that wrong. But I was like, look, it's going to be Lydia going home, which is a problem for me, unless I do something. So I was just like, how can we vote off Lydia when Morgan does nothing? Oh, Lydia's such a workhorse. She works so hard. And he's like, well, you know, we have to think about the challenges. And I was like, we haven't lost any challenges because of Lydia. Like, Lydia has never been the problem. Lydia actually got a bag in that challenge in the spider web. Lydia wasn't the problem. Lydia wasn't the problem in the tug of war. The tug of war problem is that Lydia weighs 250 pounds, and we can't do anything about that. We won one immunity challenge. And in the hike, it wasn't just Lydia slowing us down. Like, we haven't lost explicitly because of Lydia. But, you know, Morgan does nothing. And she says she can't trust you. What should you do? And then it was just a flurry. There's like a whole storm of that activity that, like, went off like wildfire. And then Gary goes and talks to everyone. Okay, Lydia Morgan, Lydia Morgan, Lydia Morgan. And that's when I'm like, oh, well, Morgan does nothing, but she's a little more useful challenges, blah, 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 blah. And I don't know what happened because I was not part of a lot of that. Because I had just said my piece to Gary, and I had said my piece to Lydia earlier to say, you need to talk about why you should stay. And then Gary just comes back to me, and he finger snaps a gun at me and goes, Morgan. And I was like, holy crap, what just happened? Like, what just happened?
Well played.
And then we're lining up to go to tribal council. And Stephanie, you know, they tell you what order to stand in, and the three in the back, the final three people in the line were Stephanie, then me, then Gary at the back carrying the flag. And Stephanie turns around and goes, if you assholes are lying to me and you're really voting me out tonight, I will kill you. And like, oh, nope, we're voting for Morgan. And that was when I was like, I don't think I'm getting played. I think that this really happened. I think that everyone's voting for Morgan. Because Stephanie wouldn't be that randomly aggressive as a show, and there's no camera on us right now because we're lining up to go to tribal council. Like, this is happening. Morgan is going home tonight. Oh, my God. And we get to tribal council, and the vote happens, and it's 8 votes against Morgan and 1 vote against Lydia. And I was just like, I do not believe what just happened. Because it was last minute. It was so last minute that when we got back from tribal council, production was like, you guys, if you're going to do something like that, you need to tell us. Plans are getting changed. We need to know. And that's why episode 2 is so, like, randomly edited with this, like, oh, Morgan's so lazy storyline. Because it came out of nowhere. Because the vote wasn't, Morgan wasn't even on the block 20 minutes before we left for tribal council. And then that just, boom, happened, and I was like, Survivor has started. Like, let's play this game.
That's wild.
And it was really exciting.
That's wild stuff. You know, you mentioned Gary being at the top of your tribe, and I think it was in episode 2, where during the mud wrestling challenge, maybe in episode 3 or so, where Danny from the other tribe points out, oh, that's Gary Hogan when he was an NFL player. And we see this as one of those season-long story arcs. How soon did you find out that may be a possibility, and how did that kind of progress?
So what's funny is that episode you're referring to, episode 2 in the tug of war, the rope pulling challenge, Danny says that to me.
Right.
So what happened was I was the guy on our team who was supposed to go try to pull the ropes from the other team. You designated someone on your team to go pull people on the other team. So I was pulling their ropes and trying to mess them up. And then Danny from their team came back to attack me. And, like, she starts to attack me, and I kind of back off because I'm going to, like, attack Danny. And meanwhile, Amy is, like, furious at me for not attacking a girl. And she's like, you take her down! It doesn't matter if she's a girl. You take her down! And I was like, oh, my God, okay, I'm sorry. Oh, my God, okay. So then that's when I kind of go at Danny, and we end up, like, wrestling a bit in the mud. And so finally I have her down kind of pinned, and Margaret comes over, and I have Margaret pinned. So I'm pinning the both of them down. And it's a stalemate. It's just ridiculous. The challenge was never going to go anywhere because Judd is so heavy. It was impossible. So we're in a stalemate. And also, that challenge did not happen the way it happened on TV. On TV, you see it go from 8-on-8 to a series of 1-on-1 batches. What happened on TV, that challenge went for 3 hours in 114 degrees. It went from 8-on-8 to 4-on-4 to 2-on-2 to 1-on-1. Reset. 8-on-8, 4-on-4, 2-on-2, 1-on-1. Reset. 8-on-8, 4-on-4, et cetera, et cetera. And we went for 4 rounds. I think only 3 rounds were shown on TV. Because one of the times Jamie and I got a flag, but because it was in a round of 2-on-2, it wouldn't have made any sense with the storyline, so they didn't show it. Anyway, so when I'm sitting with Danny in the middle of the thing, she says to me, so what's it like having a professional quarterback on their team? And I was like, what do you mean? Amy? I legit thought she meant Amy. It's like Amy's a quarterback? Because Amy did play football, but not professionally. She was, like, I guess, for fun, or anyway, she played in the women's league. So I was like, oh, do you mean Amy? And she's like, no, that's Gary Hogaboom. He was a quarterback in the 80s for the Cowboys. And I was like, no, 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 that's Gary Hawkins. And she's like, no, that's Gary Hogaboom. Did you go to Central Michigan? And I was like, yes. She's like, and his name's Gary? Yes. She's like, that's Gary Hogaboom. And I was like, okay. So when we get back to camp, I say, Gary, were you a former NFL quarterback? And Gary's like, who, me? And I was like, no, but Gary behind you. Like, yeah, of course you. Like, yeah, you a quarterback. And he's like, no, not at all. So that, of course, set off a ton of, like, side conversations between everyone in the camp. Like, do you think Gary is a quarterback? Like, what do you think? What do you think? And we basically came to a conclusion, like, he has to be. How on earth would Danny know the stuff about him if he weren't? Like, clearly he is. And he's lying about it to, I guess, make us not think he's wealthy. But the thing was, we were never going to vote off Gary. We couldn't afford to vote off Gary. And actually, that's also why Stephanie was, like, untouchable on our team. We were so weak to begin with compared to Nakum, we couldn't afford to sacrifice someone like Gary or Stephanie. Like, they were just never going to get voted off because we would just continue to lose every challenge. So we kind of, especially Amy and I talked about it a bit, especially post-flop. So Amy and I were basically like, yeah, probably, but we can't be positive. So whatever, it's a non-issue, we don't care. And then once we had all been voted off, I looked it up on the computer, and I was like, that bastard. He did it better. So I found out after I got voted off, I got the confirmation. It was just, you know, come on, how is Danny going to know all the stuff about you if she's wrong? And she's a sportscaster. Like, obviously, you are Gary Hogaboom, but whatever, I don't care if you want to say you're Gary Hawkins, fine. So, yeah, we kind of knew, but we're never positive, and we ultimately didn't care, is really what that came down to.
Right.
I think that made the situation where the fix was in on CBS's behalf, where Gary told them going in, I'm going to lie about who I am. And so they said, all right, well, we're going to put someone on there who knows who you are.
And I think absolutely. I mean, I think that makes for way more. If you know you've got someone famous but not recognizable who can pull off an everyman, it's so much better for drama if you have someone expose them, obviously. I mean, for sure. So I think either it was a super fortuitous coincidence that Danny knew him, or they knew Danny's credentials and knew that would prompt some drama. Yeah.
Right. Speaking of Tribe Swaps, a few episodes down the line, we get to the Tribe Swaps occurred in your season, which perhaps was the event that ultimately led to your downfall. So correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. The format was, it was a questionnaire challenge, and one of the questions is who has the most Tribe Pride, and you're selected for your team, and I can't remember who was selected for the other team. But those
Cindy,
two people...
I want to say Cindy, sorry.
What's that?
Was it Cindy on the other tribe who was selected?
It was Cindy, yeah.
Okay.
Cindy was bleeding yellow and I was bleeding blue.
Right. So those two people are isolated, and then one of the other questions is who deserves to go on a reward mode, and then it's two people from each tribe. And those two people are taken off their award, and then the swap is announced, and the people who are currently on each map switch maps, basically. So, and then the people who are on the reward will come back to those same tribes. It seems like it was kind of designed to, maybe not intentionally, but this is the effect at least, it was kind of designed to screw over the people who were selected as having the most tribe pride, because you're automatically going to be put into a minority, and the fact that you were selected as having the most tribe pride suggest to those people in the new majority that you were pretty solidly safe with the people that were previously there. So,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the tribe switch, I mean, that's ultimately where my game ended, and I knew I was done. And it sucked, actually, because once we had voted off Morgan, I was like, oh my god, like, I can do this. Like, I can play this game. Like, I can have some sway. This is awesome. And then the next episode, when Brianna shot herself in the foot with the basketball challenge, and they voted off Brianna, I was like, okay, so this alliance of six is nonsense. And I knew I was fine. I don't think I was going anywhere anytime soon. I think the next person to go would have been Lydia. I don't think I could have saved her again. I don't think Jamie and I and Lydia would have been able to save her again. So I think Lydia would have gone home. And then I think I would have been shortly thereafter. depending on how things broke down. But I got along great with Gary. I got along great with Stephanie. I got along great with Jamie and Lydia. So I was like, okay, I can do this for a bit. You know, I think once the tribe switched, I was like, oh, crap, because not only did I end up with Gary and Amy, with whom I had never been aligned. Like, I got along fine with Gary, but I certainly was never in his core alliance. His core alliance really was Amy, Rafe, and Stephanie. So I didn't get along at all with Amy. So when I saw that I was left with Gary and Amy in a minority position on a tribe, I was like, oh my God, like, my game is over. This sucks. You know, Cindy had it a little bit less of a hard time because on her top, because Nakum was up 8-7 at that point, she was guaranteed at least an even split on her team. They were going to go 4-4 on Nakum. But on my team, it was going to be 4-3. No matter what I did, because I was voted Tribe Pride, I was going to be in the minority. I was going to be one of the three people versus the four Nakum members. And I was just like, well, what the hell? Like, okay, so I got an uphill battle for me. At least I'm not throwing the towel. So after that challenge, Gary and Amy were off doing the picnic on the pyramid. So I was sent back to the camp alone with Danny, Brandon, Bobby John, and Blake. And it was like the most intimidating thing you could possibly imagine. I'm this, like, smallest guy on the minority position alone. And I'm just like, wow, you guys are so awesome. Everything you say is perfectly right. I agree with every sentiment you express. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I have to completely just kowtow to absolutely everything they say and do. And I remember I had previously thought that there was a showmance between Danny and Blake. As an observer on Yashaw looking over at Nakum, I was like, oh, Danny and Blake are so close. Like, I got to split. Like, I got to watch that. Because those two are going to be really tight. I ended up, of course, having misread the situation, but that was what I thought. I thought Danny and Blake were like a showmance or whatever. So when we get back to camp, I'm just like agreeing with everything they say and just, oh, yeah, yeah, we should do that. Oh, yeah, you're right. What a great idea, all of you. Trying to insinuate myself into their good graces. That's also when I start to learn, oh, you guys are kind of religious. Okay. And that's interesting. And then I realize, oh, I'm definitely the only person with a New York mentality. Okay. I don't fit in at all in this group of seven people. I just remember like one conversation where someone was like talking, because this was 2005, so it was right after the 2004 elections. And I just remember the conversations about that, and I was like, we are diametrically opposed on these issues. Like, I can't, oh my God. But, you know, you have to just kind of agree and get along. And the fact is, Brandon and Bobby John and Danny are three of the most amazing people I had met. Like, they're just so kind and genuine and amazing. Like, they're great, great people, those three. Just amazing. I like them so much, and I still, to this day, will sing praises to anyone who asks about them. But at the time, I was like, oh, my God, like, you guys, like, I'm going to be voted out by you. There's nothing I can do here. Now, and that's another, to kind of harp back to your earlier question, that's another place where I felt like my age was a liability. Because Brandon was also 22, but Brandon and Danny were inseparable. They were like brother and sister because they're both from Kansas, and that Kansas connection was really strong, and they just have a lot of the same just lifestyles and values, and they were really like brother and sister. And I, meanwhile, was the kid on the other team. You know, they had Gary and Amy. Amy was hilarious. Everyone loved Amy. So Amy was like the comic relief on the tribe. And Gary was very much like the elder statesman on the tribe. And then there was this kid from New York City who kind of doesn't fit in right with any of us. So I was aware of that, which is why I was doing things in episode 5, like praying with them and all that, whatever I could do to get myself with them, because I knew that I was the one who stuck out like a sore thumb.
Brian, I don't mean to cut you off, but we've seen religion play a big role, obviously, last season in Survivor, and apparently, you know, I want to ask you about this, because Dom and I are both also atheists, and I'm assuming you're atheist, agnostic, whatever, just from your tone and whatever, but obviously you were on a tribe that embraced religion, and we've often thought about, you know, how someone with our beliefs or lack thereof would approach that situation. So what kind of, and you know, you mentioned praying with them, Did you tell them anything about, you know, I don't necessarily agree with you, or did you just kind of play along and hope to stay in the majority?
Oh, no way. Yeah, definitely played along with the majority. It's funny. It's not even that I'm, like, atheist or agnostic or anything. I'm just, like, super, just a-religious. Like, I'm, you know what, power to you. Have whatever religion you want. I'm cool with it. But, like, keep it to yourself. Like, there's nothing more obnoxious than proselytizing and the arrogance of saying your way of life is better than someone else's way of life. Like, it's just such a turnoff to me. So if you want to do your own thing and it helps you spiritually and it gives you guidance and gives you morality, fantastic. Go for it. But, like, don't push it on to me. What happened was they were never aggressive about it. Never. It was just an assumed thing because the rest of my tribe, it was a shared thing. For 6/7 of my tribe, or maybe at least 5/7 of my tribe, it was a shared thing. So, you know, it was very natural for Gary and Danny and maybe to a lesser extent Brandon and Bobby John and Blake and Amy and to a far lesser extent me. So it was just like, okay, I'll go along with this, but I didn't want to stick out. I didn't want to say, like, guys, I feel kind of uncomfortable thanking Jesus. It's very insincere coming from me. Like, it feels very false, so I don't want to do this. And, you know, I just thought, what good is that going to do me? I'm already so far, like, on the chopping block here. Why would I further alienate myself? Like, I can suck it up and pray a few times to them if it can get me further in this game. And so the whole religion thing, I mean, of course, I just find it too much, but in a public setting. And in South Pacific, I mean, good Lord, all that, like, I would have hung myself. I don't know what I would have done. I'm friends with Sophie now, and I know Sophie had a very similar approach last season of kind of just like, okay, this is the hand I've been dealt. I will play along with this, with these cards. I'll play this game. If the parameters of the win involve being a religious person, I'll play. Fine, whatever. So I did, and it was not so much difficult as it was just kind of like frustrating and just kind of like, ugh, okay, here we go. Yeah, thank you, Jesus, for that win today. Like, yeah, I'm sure you had a hand in that. Like, I'm sure you had a vested interest in whether Yashad beat Nakum in the street. Like, okay. And that's such a denigrating thing to say, and I'm aware. I realize, like, how much that sounds like I'm stepping on people's beliefs, and I apologize for that, but it's just like, I mean, bigger picture, people. Like, you can be thankful for your health, be thankful for your happiness, but, like, don't be thankful that you won the challenge. Like, that's so trivial. And I whatever. I mean, I could go on about this for an hour, but it's, like, really obviously a hot topic and controversial. But, whatever. Their religion became my religion for those days.
Yeah, I think that's generally the better approach to take in terms of just whatever gets you in the majority and doesn't make you stick out. I think you're right.
And I harnessed it to my advantage because Blake would kept telling these stories about, like, oh, this sexual conquest I once had, and oh, this great drunk story I have, and oh, this, all this money I flaunt. And I was like, dude, read the room. Like, Gary and Danny are not impressed by these stories. So that was my plan. I was like, okay, you know what? I'll play within the religious parameters, and I will make sure Blake keeps telling these, like, horrendously immoral stories to turn everyone else off, and the more he tells these stories, the better off I am. So I was just like, wait, what's your best drunk story? Oh my god, that's hilarious. What's the craziest place you've ever had sex? Oh my god, that's hilarious. Tell me another one. And, you know, it got on everyone's nerves to the point where they voted him out. So that worked well for me.
Yeah, well, we're going to ask you about the whole baiting bait strategy, but you've gone into it in pretty good detail. So at the next tribal council, your name comes up for the first time, I guess. What was your plan to save yourself at that boot? And because it was weird, because it was a double boot episode, and most of the drama was centered on the other camp with the whole Margaret and Judd feud, we never really got to see what was going on in your tribe. So can you give us the backstory on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so once Blake was gone, we were back down to a 3-3 split, Yashad and Nakum. And what I didn't know at the time was that Gary and Amy had made a deal with Danny in particular. Danny was really the ringleader of the other three. And they made a deal with her that they won't put up a fight to save me if we can all get rid of Blake first. So Blake went home, and then unbeknownst to me, it was a done deal that I would be the next to go. But, of course, I didn't know that, and I was certainly not one to lay around and not try to win and not really strategize and play hard. So what I did, and to this day I still think this would have worked, and Amy, as soon as Amy gets voted off, she was like, yeah, what was that plan you had? I think I should have done that. And I was like, ah, goddamn it, Amy, like, come on. Ah! So my plan was, Amy's ankle was bad, as you saw on TV. And so I said to Gary and Amy, I pulled them aside. Actually, you see very briefly on TV, I'm talking to Gary, and he says, I just don't want it to be a tie. And I say, it doesn't have to be a tie. And then they completely cut out everything else. I think it's too convoluted for TV, and it ended up not playing out. But I said, here's what we should do. Gary, let's you and I go to Danny, Brandon, and Bobby John and say, you know what, guys? For the betterment of the team, we should really vote out Amy. Like, she knows it. She knows it's coming. She's made peace with it. She knows she's going home. She's okay. But, like, her ankle's just too much of a liability. I'll vote her out. But listen, Amy doesn't want to go out unanimously. She says she's okay with getting voted off, but she just doesn't want to go home unanimously. So just throw a pity vote my way, Brandon. Because Brandon also really struggled with the mean parts of the game, understandably. Brandon struggled with voting people out and crushing people's dreams and ending their games. So I went personally over to Brandon. I said, listen, Brandon, I know you don't like voting people out, and Amy doesn't really want to go home unanimously. So just throw a vote my way. I won't take it personally. It'll take all the guilt away from you. Like, you won't feel bad about sending Amy home. I won't hold it against you for voting against me. And Amy will go home, and we'll move forward from here. So at that point, the idea was that Danny and Bobby John would be voting for Amy, thinking that Gary and I would join her. And Brandon would be voting for me, thinking it would spare him the guilt of sending Amy home and not send Amy home unanimously. So with them splitting their votes, two for Amy and one for Brian, Amy, Gary, and I could swoop in with three votes against Bobby John and take him out. And I thought that plan was foolproof, except I didn't know that Gary and Amy had already made this deal with Danny. And so Gary and Danny, and again, I think this is another point where my youth really did hurt me. I think Gary was like, okay, that's adorable, Brian. You're so cute with this little plan of yours. Okay, fine. And I also really underestimated the bond that Gary and Danny shared between their athleticism, their religion, just all that. I really underestimated how close Gary and Danny were. So in practicality, the plan never would have worked because of the ties between Gary and Danny. Gary would never have deceived Danny in that manner. But I think if I had been with a few more savvy players and people who were maybe a little bit like more like, yeah, this is so exciting, like, let's do this, and maybe, you know, with that childish naivete of like, ooh, Survivor, fun, let's make a big move. I think it could have worked. I do. I mean, even 7 years later, I think that if Gary and Amy really were thinking about putting themselves in the majority position, had Gary and Amy voted off Bobby John that night, Bobby John would have gone home. It would have been me, Gary, and Amy with Danny and Brandon. And then heading to the merge, you know, if we had to vote off one other person, if we had lost another challenge, we could have gone back into the merge with the Ushaw majority. And one of the big problems Gary had was he was never able to insinuate himself back into the old Ushaw tribe. And I do think that I would have had more success pulling Lydia and Jamie back over, because I was really close with Lydia and Jamie. But Gary and Amy had nothing to do with Lydia and Jamie. And then Rafe and Stephanie had already made their really strong ties with Judd, really. So there was no moving Stephanie and Rafe away from Judd. I think you easily could have moved. And actually, you know what? I probably wouldn't be able to move Jamie away from Judd. Let me not take credit for that. But I really think I could have swayed Lydia to come back to us. So if we had gone into the merge with Amy and me and Danny and Lydia and Gary, I think we could have done something there and maybe even pulled Cindy, depending. Anyway, it would have been a different game, obviously, and I could have still been voted off early. But unfortunately, I went home that night, and I was the seventh person voted off, and I just missed the jury and the merge. And I would have loved to keep playing. I mean, I was so not ready to go. I love the game of Survivor. I think it's amazing. It's so exciting, so much fun. And so that's what happened, and I was voted off. The whole thing with Gary and the idol and Rafe, like, that thing. Rafe had won immunity, so he could give someone else on the other team immunity. And none of that was explained to us. Remember, this was very, like, early in terms of hidden immunity idols and all that. So none of the rules were ever clear. So when Rafe was going to bestow immunity upon someone, I didn't know what was going to happen. Was that going to nullify the votes? Were we going to have to re-vote? Like, let's say Rafe had given Amy immunity, And then my plan had worked, and Amy's two votes, are those now negated, or does someone have to re-vote? And now once our plan has been realized, are they going to be pissed, and now something else is going to happen? Like, so when Rafe was asked to give immunity to someone, I was like, Rafe, give it to Gary. Because I still thought my plan was going to happen, because Amy and Gary totally played me to their total credit. They were like, oh, yeah, totally, we'll do that. Great plan, Brian. So they 100% played me. Good, you know, good gameplay. I was impressed. I was happy. So, but at the time, I thought my plan was happening. So when they asked Rafe who should he give immunity to, I said, give it to Gary. Because Gary was not part of my voting plan, so Gary wasn't supposed to get any votes anyway. So if Gary gets immunity, who cares? It doesn't mess things up. We'll still have 3 votes Bobby John, 2 votes Amy, 1 vote Brian. So don't screw things up by throwing an immunity wrench into that plan. And that's what happened there. So I was totally fine getting voted off. I think everyone had really nice things to say about me. I don't think anyone thought I was weak or mean or lazy or anything like that. I think, you know, I was the kid who didn't fit in on the newly mixed tribe, and they had the majority, and Amy and Gary wisely made new alliances, and I went out. And I think I went out proud, and I was like, I'm so glad you guys are playing hard. I wish you well. I shook their hands. I was like, I had a great time with you guys. I lived a dream. Like, I played Survivor. This is freaking awesome. I wish I were still there. I wish I were still playing, but I really can't be disappointed. I think I did the best that I could, given the circumstances I was in.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so that marked the end of your personal Survivor experience, if you like. But what, I guess we have a few questions about the season in general. So what do you think of Dani as a winner of your season? Like, what do you think of her and of the game that she played?
I liked Dani. I liked her a lot. Dani and I had some conversations. You know, you don't see so much on TV. You're there all day, bored out of your mind. You end up having a lot of one-on-one conversations with everybody. So I had a lot of one-on-one conversations with Dani, and I found her genuine, and I believed everything she said, and I thought she was really athletic and certainly just a smart woman and obviously gorgeous and just a lot of fun to be around. So I thought she played a very smart game. At Final Tribal Council, someone asks her, like, about lying, and she says the only people she lied to in the game were Blake and me. And she did lie to me that night, but I was like, good on you. Like, you should be lying in Survivor. I think you did a fantastic job, Dani. I think that you were really the leader the entire game. She was the leader of the original Nakum Alliance, which never made it to TV, with Margaret and Brooke, another one I love, Brooke. But Margaret and Brooke and Brandon and Dani, they weren't really the original Nakum Alliance until the split ended Margaret and Brooke's game. Dani was there. Dani was really the actual leader of New Yasha. It wasn't Gary, it was Dani. And then Dani really played her cards right after the merge. She knew who to snuggle up to. She knew kind of where to sneak into. Was she the best at giving confessionals? No. But that's because she didn't trust production to not give away her strategy. So she was like, I know what I'm doing, and I'm not telling you what I'm doing because you're going to tell other people. So, no, I'm playing my game, and I don't care whether or not I'm entertaining, but I'm trying to get $1 million, and I know what I need to do. I think Dani was very savvy and very wily, and I think she earned every vote she got.
Okay. One of the defining relationships of the season was the relationship between Rafe and Steph. What was really going on there? Because as you mentioned when you talked about Dani, and as you mentioned earlier, the editing in your season was pretty weird on the whole, so we can't really trust what we're being shown, and you know, it's hard for us to kind of unpack the dynamics there. So what was really going on behind that?
With specifically Rafe and Stephanie?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rafe and Stephanie were really close when I was with them. You know, I was with them for the first, when their switch happened. Our switch happened on day 9, I think. So I was actually only with Rafe and Stephanie for the first 9 days. So they were really close. They got along great. They were both very wildernessy and survivalist. I know they remained close for a while after the game. I don't know how close they are today, but certainly after the game they were very close still, and Rafe ends up voting for Stephanie in the end. So from all that I understand, I guess I'm only slightly more in the light than most of the viewers on this, but Rafe and Stephanie were really going to go to the final two together. They were the ultimate duo. Those two were running the show. Rafe probably more so. I think Rafe was more savvy, and especially in his handling of other people. So I think Rafe probably would have won and gone to the final two with Stephanie and beaten her handily. The whole thing with Dani was weird, though. Like, Rafe truly believed Danny would still take him to the finals, too. Rafe really didn't think that releasing Danny from his promise would actually release her from the promise. Like, I think Rafe thought that he was being, like, a noble, like, oh, Danny, you can do whatever you'd like. But no, seriously, take me. I think that's basically what he was thinking. And then, you know, they give all these cockamamie excuses for why they voted off Lydia instead of Danny at Final Four. But, I mean, that's insanity. Like, the idea, oh, well, you know, historically, older women performed well in the final challenge. Like, when Lil beat Sandra in Pearl Island, then when Kim Johnson beat the other guys in
Africa.
Africa, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, so historically, the older women perform well in the final immunity challenge. Okay, yeah. But you're looking at, and they say, and Danny was really frail and sick the last few days. I mean, I'll take sick Danny over energized Lydia any day of the week in an athletic competition. Like, you know, the final challenge is typically something like endurance. On the one hand, like, I get it. I get if you're in the game and you're just, like, so paranoid and you're thinking that. But on paper, I mean, really, Lydia versus Danny? Danny's actually won some challenges already. You know that, right? She won challenges, and you're still going to take Lydia, who's won nothing and hasn't even placed in any challenge ever, and you're still going to take Danny over Lydia? Like, that's insanity. I don't know. I think it was delusion to some degree to think that Danny was still going to take Rafe when Stephanie was such the obvious pariah.
Yeah, well, Well, specifically about Ray, then, it's difficult to know what to think about him as viewers, because we see him running the show and seeming pretty strategic times, but at other times he comes across as very emotional and just making decisions on the fly. What do you think his mindset actually was during the game?
I think Ray's head was really in the game, and I think Ray's head only left the game when he felt super secure. Like, the whole thing with Cindy in the car, like, the indignance he displayed came out of nowhere. Like, Rafe's a cool dude. Like, I like Rafe. Rafe is smart, and Rafe is super funny. I mean, Rafe wrote for Chuck, that show on NBC, up through its finale just recently. So Rafe has a tremendous mind. He's very bright. He's very funny. But, like, this weird indignance that kind of showed up was weird, I guess?
I think if I can come to Rafe's defense a bit there, I think strategically Cindy's move there is such a no-brainer that to see her make the opposite decision kind of shocked someone, because, you know, I know he put his little spin on it where he said, oh, I would do it because I want everyone else to be happy and everyone else should get the car. But it's more to the point, you should do that so that you're not the one person getting a car and depriving the other four of a car when they all know that you could be giving each of them a car. And it's surprising to see someone make the wrong decision there, I think.
Yeah, it's just, yes, but also Cindy has no car. Cindy takes a boat to work, or at the time, this was obviously 7 years ago. Cindy was like a carless woman who took like a boat to work, and she was, and Lydia had said to take the car, and you know, Rafe is, I think, not poor off in life, and certainly Stephanie was not poor off in life, and Danny was not poor off in life, and it was just the five of them left at that point. So when you're looking at, like, the poorest person on the team, probably the second poorest person on the team, the poorest person at that point was Lydia, and Lydia was saying, take the car. So when you're the second poorest person on the team, to give cars, and I realize it's a strategic game, so it's not the point so much as it is to, like, show the goodwill of, like, hey, don't vote me off, I give you a car. But I think it's a hard pill to swallow when you really need a car and you're going to give cars to people who are wealthier than you are. I think it's a hard pill for Cindy to swallow, and I don't think Cindy was ever the most strategic person in the game. So I think the outrage that Rafe displayed at her behavior, I don't know, I think you should have seen that coming. I mean, if you psychologize the people left in the game, it makes sense for Cindy to make that decision, especially given that the only person less well off than she was saying, take the car. You should absolutely take the car. I think Stephanie was telling her to take the car. Lydia was telling her to take the car. I can't imagine Danny was saying, don't take the car. So, I don't know. You're the poor person. All everyone else is saying, take the car. We don't mind, except for Rafe. I don't know, take the car. And everyone seems to be fine with it, except for Rafe.
All right, well, that's fair enough. Now, I want to ask you next about, you were in the first season to feature returning players, but not an entire cast of returning players, but
right,
a cast that we've now seen a couple times, where you had two returning players, obviously. in the form of Stephanie and Bobby John. How do you think that impacts your season specifically, and then also Survivor in general? How do you think that changes
that? Well, we like to think of our season as the trailblazer in the terrible twist idea. So, yes, bringing back two people, I just don't think is a good idea. I think for several reasons. I mean, certainly on Redemption Island, and to a lesser degree, South Pacific, it's just such a dumb thing. Like, let's bring back these people who know how to play the game and put them against a bunch of people who don't know how to play the game and expect anything less than them running the show. It's ridiculous. Like, of course they're going to run the show. Like, especially in our season, Stephanie was irreplaceable on our team. I mean, in terms of this, our season being billed as the toughest season, both in terms of environment and the challenges, what are we going to do? Sacrifice Stephanie and then keep Morgan and Amy and Lydia and Brianna as the women on our team to go up against Margaret and Cindy and Brooke and Danny? Like, of course Stephanie's going to go nowhere. And then, of course, we're going to defer to her because she has advice. She has done this before. And then, obviously, for Rob in Redemption Island, yeah, the other team threw out Russell, but Rob had played three times before, and everyone was just, like, I found that season tremendously boring. And as much as I love Andrea, who is part of our little New York crew right now, as much as I love Andrea, that whole season was just like, yay, Rob is playing a masterful game against a bunch of newbies, like...
Yeah, it's just to cut in, that season's not fair. Yes, this is a guy... That Redemption Island, I have a huge problem with, just because I think a lot of Boston Rob fans cite that as some proof of how he's the greatest of all time, and he is an extremely good player. But that season does not count at all to me in terms of this is his fourth time playing against people who are not good at the game.
Who like are barely playing for the first time. Yeah, really.
Right.
I totally agree. I think Redemption Island was one of the worst seasons. It just wasn't entertaining. Like, yes, Rob played a masterful game, but A, he should, and B, his competition was largely a joke. So, okay, congratulations. I'm excited for you. Like, I don't want to... It's actually unfortunate, I think, because I think he is a really good player.
For sure.
But I think that season is not a great example of it because you weren't playing against people of your caliber. So...
I think...
And then South Pacific, again, with, like, Coach and Ozzy, again, it's like, yeah, of course they end up the leaders of the tribe. Like, this isn't interesting, guys. Like, I think they're doing it again in the future. Spoiler alert. But it's just, I don't know, it's not interesting to me to watch people who have done this before beat people who haven't done this before.
I thought the case of Bobby John was quite interesting because it seems like his result was the ideal result you'd want from a returning player. So they come back and they're interesting, and you get something new from them, but they don't end up taking over the season.
Yeah. Bobby John is, I mean, and I think actually what you saw with Bobby John, which makes him unique among the six people who have returned for a season like that, is that Bobby John wasn't a dominant presence on his first season. Bobby John wasn't a strategic leader. Bobby John, well, nor was Coach. But Bobby John wasn't this great figure on his season that everything revolved around. Bobby John was this like great guy from Alabama who like got some hard luck case on this crappy tribe and then lost a bunch of challenges, and he really rooted for him. The other people who returned, Stephanie and Coach and Russell and Rob and Ozzy, all dominant, especially physically or at least in terms of their massive personality, like certainly Russell and Coach. So Bobby John is an interesting person to bring back because he'll fit more nicely into a mix. People aren't going to say, like, oh, let me do everything Bobby John says because he did everything right the first time. You know, or he's, like, really a strategic mastermind and I want to be on his team. People are going to gravitate to Bobby John because he's likable, because I enjoy being around him, because I like the stories he tells. That's why you're going to gravitate to Bobby John, and it'll make for a much more integrated cast than any of the other returning players did.
Yeah, sure. Why do you think it is that none of the original cast members in your season have been invited back for All-Stars yet? It seems that, and your season is the only one which has that distinction.
It's so sad, right? I mean, I think I like to think it's because all the really great players went out pre-jury, basically. That's what I tell myself. That's how I sleep at night.
All the really great players went out during the 7th Tribal Council.
Yeah, all the really great players, exactly. Every last one of them went out that night. I like your style.
I like your move.
I think that I think that our season is like the easily forgotten season because I think it was probably supposed to be much like Redemption Island was for Rob, Stephanie's redemption season. It was supposed to be the story of Stephanie coming back and winning the game and everyone's so happy. Instead, it's like Stephanie came back and kind of everyone turned against her and she got a really negative edit and then lost a 6-1 vote. We just thought, let's forget Guatemala happened. Let's like shoot that under the rug. I also think, like, who are you really going to bring back from the people who made it far in our season? I guess you could bring back Gary.
I would say Judd off the top of my list. Sorry to interrupt, but I think Judd. I was shocked that we didn't see Judd again.
Well, here's why I think. I mean, I think the three people, I would argue, have been really robbed at a second chance from our season are Rafe, Judd, and Gary. I think Gary could definitely make another show. I don't think he cares to. And I think there have been a lot of Gary clones since then. For example, Stephen Wright from Redemption Island. So I don't know that you're ever going to see Gary again. Rafe, I believe, was in contention several times to come back, but then just didn't because he's very successful. Rafe has done great things now. Rafe has a new life. I think if maybe the cards lined up, you could see Rafe again. But I think Rafe was not interested for a while. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but that's my impression. And Judd, here's the thing about Judd. I think Judd was a real hothead to the producers, and I think they had a hard time with him in their eyes. I think Judd will vehemently disagree. And while I think Judd is amazing, and Judd is a total hoot to hang around, and his wife, Kristen, is awesome, and I love it when they're at Survivor events because it's much more fun, I think Judd may be a little bit of a handful for a production to deal with, and I think that's just not worth their headache, and that's why.
Story checks out. That would make some sense. So I guess actually a question I had was about Stephanie, because we saw in Palau, she perhaps even surpassed Rupert in terms of her peak popularity was just so high during Palau. I'm wondering, you obviously know Stephanie, having played with her and know her personally outside of the game. I kind of always got the sense just retrospectively that in Palau, people were more rooting for just an underdog rather than specifically Stephanie. And then we saw her get that less positive edit and to the point of perhaps a negative edit. Certainly, I would say certainly a negative edit in Guatemala. So I guess the question becomes, in terms of Stephanie's popularity, how much do you think just that underdog position contributed to that versus Stephanie herself?
Well, I think Stephanie's at her best when she is the underdog, because then she has someone to root for. You root for an underdog. It's to counter a little bit with what you said, I think people were to some degree rooting for Stephanie herself, not just as an underdog, because she was like plucky and she was so competitive and she was so athletic and she was doing things specifically like, you know, working hard, and people could empathize with her when she's like, oh, I'm stuck at this camp with James Miller and Bobby John and Ibrahim and I have nothing to talk about with them. Like, they just spit all the time and, like, smell her body odor. And so I think people are like, oh, that poor girl, Stephanie, she's such a hard worker. What a competitive girl. And she's just stuck with all this ragtag group of misfits who can't pull it together. So, yeah, the underdog obviously played heavily into that. But I think Stephanie herself, I think there's a reason Stephanie was really the one people rooted for, as opposed to, say, Ibrahim or James Miller or, it's really those two. But, on our season, you just saw the other side of Stephanie, which is an equally fair side of Stephanie, which is very competitive and perhaps not one to take lightly to insults or doesn't suffer fools gladly and doesn't like it when she feels like she's slowed down by the people. And you know, to another degree, too, if it's your second time on Survivor and you're still like, ah, why isn't this working out? I can get her frustration. It just doesn't play well to a non-sympathetic audience, that's all. But I like Stephanie. I think she's, you know, there's very few people from the show I don't like. There were plenty of people I didn't like while I was playing this game. I did not like Amy. I did not like Blake. I was happy to talk about them to the camera, dirt talk all day about them. But once you kind of get to know people out of the game, That's why I didn't leave the game angry. It's like, okay, everything happened in the game, and then after the game, you're all cool people. I like you all. I've got nothing bad to say about you guys. But in the game, I would, like, run you over with a truck. So Stephanie, I liked her. I actually liked Stephanie in the game. I liked her competitiveness. I thought I got along with her really well. I thought we could relate on that competitive level. I suspect I might not get as great an edit either if I were able to play a second time and be as frustrated as Stephanie was as a lot of the times in the game. You know, did she need to say things like, Bobby Town looks so gay and retarded? No, she didn't need to say that. That was foolish. Did she need to say things like, oh, why does this always happen to me? Like, oh, I'm always stuck on the worst team. Like, oh, that's not very, very generous of you. So she probably picked her words poorly, but that's, you know, that's a Jersey girl. That's what you do. That's what you cast. That's what you get. And that's what you want. So I'll stand up for Stephanie.
What are your thoughts on this current season? I mean, I assume you're still watching it fairly avidly.
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like the old guy at the senior home who, like, sits in the rocker out front, like, ah, I thought that when I was on Survivor, we had to walk uphill 11 miles in the jungle. And, like, you know, like, I feel like the show has gotten easier. I don't know. It's like, oh, boo, you had a rainstorm. You had a lot of rainstorms. Like, yeah, so did we, and we had mosquitoes, and it was 118 degrees, and it was 100% humidity, and the crocodiles were in the lake, so we couldn't go swimming, so I don't want to hear it. And, you know, the whole hidden immunity out thing, like, I'm sort of a Survivor purist. I understand from a production standpoint why you need to mix it up, why you need to keep, but here's the thing, like, Survivor's audience has been 10 million, 10.5, 11 million people for the past, like, 5 years. So you got your audience. You don't need to keep shaking it up. Like, they're not going anywhere. Like, yeah, Survivor was 20 million people 7 years ago, and now it's atrophied. But now it's plateaued. It's at its 10 million, 10.5, 11 million people who will watch this show no matter what you do. Like, you could put stupid-ass Colton on the show, and we still watch. Like, you can't ruin the show. So all these dumb twists you keep doing with, like, hidden immunity idol this, and, like, double travel council that, and blah-de-blah returning player this. Like, it's just, come on. Like, ugh. I'm so sick of these two returning players dominating the game, and we don't get to learn a lot about these new people. Like, Sophie had so much more, so many more cool insights into last season. And we barely know Sophie as viewers, but, like, having met her and hung out with her frequently and talking to her, like, Sophie's awesome. And I don't think you really got a lot of that on TV because, oh, let's pan back to Coach because Coach is doing some crazy Tai Chi. Like, isn't this hilarious? No, it's not. That's Coach. I want to learn someone new.
Sophie is actually someone we're going to be talking to very shortly. I actually just was contact. I talked to Sophie yesterday, and she's going to be coming on the podcast. Just not. I know this has nothing to do with you, Brian, but she's definitely going to be coming on. We're going to get plenty to hear from Sophie. Plenty of questions for her.
Awesome.
Yeah. So definitely check that out. Now, Brian, I know you've been a big fan of Survivor for a long time, obviously. And one thing, you know, you mentioned not loving all these twists, and I think it's safe to say neither do we, generally speaking, in terms of Redemption Island, I thought was an abortion, first of all. What are your views on just Survivor, you know, it's the evolution of Survivor as such a fan over the entire run of the show?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's something that changes having been on the show. I always kind of said, like, after I had been on the show, the one thing you realize is like, oh, I've been behind the curtain. It's like Wizard of Oz and Dorothy sees the wizard behind the curtain. You, like, ignore the man behind the curtain. You can't ignore it anymore. So you watch it and you're like, oh, I know what happened there. Like, oh, I know what we're not seeing. Oh, I know how they got to Tribal Council. Oh, I know what you do before this challenge. Like, oh, I know what daily life is like. I know what the producer was asking you to get you to say that. So you really watch it, for me personally, from a completely different vantage point after you've been on the show. So it's weird to me because I had that view, and I still love the show. It hasn't ruined it for me. But whether it was the fact that I was so young before I was on the show or the fact that I hadn't yet been on the show, I don't know which of the two variables it is. But watching seasons 1 through 10, there was like a magic to them. That was like, this show is so cool. Like, oh my God, look at these people. They're so amazing. Look at what they're doing. Oh my God. And then you go on the show and it's phenomenal and it's the most amazing, incredible experience I've ever had. But you do, you know, you're like watching the cook make your dinner and you're like, ooh, that's what went into that soup? Yeah, I'm sorry, I ate that. So you watch it the second time after you've been on the show and you're like, oh, I know why it looks like he said that, or I know why they did that. So it's a weird evolution. A lot of the magic is gone from the show. Like, I don't watch the show anymore and think, like, wow. Like, I haven't said wow before I was on the show. But I do appreciate good gameplay. And I think that that's what Survivor is missing. I think we get too many people on the show who don't really know the show. You know, there's these, like, plucked out models and such. And while some of them turn out to be fantastic and totally awesome on the show, a lot of them are just like, I don't know, what do you bring to the show? You didn't do anything. I don't want to watch you. You're not interesting. Like, I want to see people be, like, really hardcore playing. And, like, the fact that I have to think in my head right now to the past new person who was, like, hardcore player, who was like, damn, this person has it locked down. I am rooting for that person because they're playing so well. Like, I have to think about that. Like, who was that? Who was the last new player to be like, wow, that person's awesome? Like, Kim this season, I guess? She's pretty good. Sabrina was good earlier on the season. I don't know.
The first one that jumps off the top of my head to me is Stephen Fishback from season 18.
Oh, God, Stephen. Like, Stephen's going to kill me. I hope Stephen never hears that. Like, whoops. So, Stephen, we have our New York crew, and it's Eliza and Stephen and Charlie and Sash and Sophie and Andrea and Francesca.
The Wine and Cheese Alliance, right?
The Wine and Cheese. You are reputation for season.
I follow you guys on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm the one who's not on Twitter. So every time you see one of them tweet, Brian needs to get Twitter, that's what that's about. Eliza will, like, knock it off my case about not being on Twitter. So we all hang out. And obviously, Stephen will be really pissed that I didn't cite him. Yeah, Stephen Fishback is the second coming of Jesus, down to the Judaism. So I am a big Stephen Fishback, of course, I'm a giant fan of it, obviously. And we're very sorry that he was shut out in a no vote. We call him, he's on Team No Vote with Sash. Sash and Steven are our Team No Vote. I would love to watch Steven play again.
For sure. And Brian, you weren't on Guatemala as long as we all would have liked, but certainly during your time on there, you were one of the most compelling narrators perhaps in Survivor history. And I think that...
Thank you.
I think this podcast is just even further proof that you are one of the best uninterrupted speakers I have ever heard on the show.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate that.
We have this long list of questions we wanted to ask you, and you just answered them more spontaneously without us having to contribute anything. So thank you for that. Save us a lot of work.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, Brian, so thank you very, very much for taking all the time today. We were absolutely thrilled to get the chance to talk to you.
That was my pleasure. This was a lot of fun. I'm always happy to reminisce about Survivor. Thanks, guys, for contacting me. That was great. I'm happy to do this.
No, it's great to do it with you. Yeah, before we wrap, is there anything you want to plug, anybody you want to mention, anything like that?
No, I'm just doing my thing now. I want Jeff Probst to still do a Second Chance Survivor. That's my thing. I wrote him one time in Entertainment Weekly. He had ranked all the seasons, and he put Guatemala at, like, this was, I think, after Heroes versus Villains. So he ranked Guatemala as, like, 14th out of 20th. And for every other season, he wrote this beautiful little prose about, oh, here's why the season shines, and here are the star players, and blah, 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 blah. And then he writes for Guatemala. Guatemala, number 14. Why not? And that's it. That's all that he writes. And I was like, oh, come on. Like, we seriously are, like, the little bastard child of Jeff Probst and Mark Burnett. Like, nobody wants to talk about us. We're, like, the kid they had when they were 19 that, like, they don't want anyone to know about. So I wrote to Entertainment Weekly as a letter from a fan. I was like, Jeff, come on. Like, that's all you're going to give us? Seriously? Why not? And they had Jeff Probst write back to me. So they printed this all in the magazine. And they had him write back to me. And in my letter, I had said, I think you need to do a Second Chance season. That's what I think. And he's like, oh, not going to happen. Don't hold your breath. And I was like, whatever. Come on. It'd be interesting. Not everyone who went out pre-jury was a bad player. So.
Well, were that situation ever to come up, you would be very near the top of my list, if not the top, in terms of I would love to see you play again. I think many people would echo that same sentiment.
Thank you. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And, I don't think it'll ever happen, but if it did, I would rally hard to make it on there and play as absolutely hard as I possibly could, because that show is a gift, and playing it is so much fun.
Absolutely. And Brian, thank you again. I think that is all we have for you today from Brian. And so, Dom, anything else to add before we get out of here?
No, that's about it for me. Thank you again, Brian. And, we hope you guys, if you made it this far, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.